Welcome to the OFX podcast. I'm Dave Claxton, and this episode is brought to you by Duonamic, creator of incredible doorway pull-up thingies that are difficult to pronounce, so I'm not even going to try, but they're awesome to use. And with me, as always, is our very own burpee bombshell, Bethany McChesney.
Hello.
Why are you the burpee bombshell this weekend?
Why am I? Because I had to do burpees?
Damn right. Spear misser.
I did miss my spear. A lot of the girls did. You know, I haven't thrown a Spartan spear in 2 years or more, probably more than that now. And I practice the spear all the time, but like all of our homemade spear contraptions all are a little bit different. Mine's, I picked up the spear and I was like, damn, this is heavy. And then of course the spear throws on a weird hill and I threw it hard enough, but because it was on a weird angle, I totally veered off to the right. But every girl except one in the top group of people missed their spear. So I hammered out my 30 burpees. It is what it is. It's the
sad,
spear.
Sad.
I was kind of laughing in my head too. I was like, oh, I missed this so much.
as I like to do, I will mock you. I haven't missed a spear in a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't either. I was a bit disappointed in myself.
So obviously you and Ryan were having the discussion today about, you know, does it belong? Should it not be there in the thing? And this one's gone back and forth forever.
Yeah.
And conclusion in my mind is, and I've always said that I don't think it belongs in the elite wave.
Uh-huh.
You know, it just... Yeah. It's not that, you know, I mean, it's a practicable skill. You can get better at it. There's no doubt about it. Some people say that it's like luck and 50-50 or whatever. No, it's not. It's a practicable skill. Mm-hmm. Terrain can change, but you need to learn how to adapt. I mean, if archers can, you know, and snipers and stuff can compensate for wind and do all that stuff, we can figure out how to throw a spear.
Yeah.
I just don't think it belongs in that style of competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the conversation came out of Lindsay's post that she made this morning, about the race with her and Emma. So essentially she had said Emma had the race and they were close, but Emma was definitely the stronger athlete on that day. And then the spear must have been late in the race and Emma missed her spear. Lindsay got hers. And then Lindsay ultimately won the race, but Lindsay was actually pretty upset about it. And just again, feeling like it shouldn't have come down to that because Emma was the stronger athlete on the day. So that's where it kind of brings into question, is this type of obstacle then really, is it really legitimate in a race situation? And so according to Lindsay's post where she actually got quite emotional about it, she said it just isn't, and she used the word luck. It's an obstacle of luck. And we know, with the more training that you do, you can get better at the spear, but there's just always this element of, or even we've all had it where the spear like bounces out. And again, like you hit it and for whatever reason, it doesn't stick, especially when in Canada, we used to have the plastic wrap hay bales. And sometimes the plastic would spit the spear back out, or it just doesn't hit right or whatever. So there is kind of this strange element of luck to it. I also find it to be one of the hardest obstacles to train because again, the spears are super different. I know monkey bars and everything are different too, but also, what about all these people living in cities and apartments? How do you train for a spear throw? You can have your hanging devices and stuff too, but it's just a weird one to train for.
I was just trying to think, hey, could you get the people like a couple balconies down to set up a target for you and you just throw it across?
That's so dangerous.
Sorry, dude, I hit your barbecue there. My bad, you know. Can I have a steak?
Yeah, it's just one of those awkward ones really to train for. But yeah, so that's kind of where I was like, does it really belong in a race? And it's people. So I was reading some threads today too, where people are like, it's the only obstacle where the elites even have the opportunity to fail. So it is kind of the one thing where it comes down to who's going to hit their spear or not. But I just think with the amount of training you put into like your running and your obstacle game, and if a race is won or lost based on the spear, it just is so, especially in the sprint, it's so just mentally frustrating when there's a 30 burpee penalty.
So that comes down to what kind of race do you want? I mean,
yeah.
A race where everybody, where rarely people fail obstacles, to me, is still an exciting race. I don't care if everybody goes clean. I actually kind of enjoy that. That's still an exciting race. What it shows is people getting better and better at obstacle proficiency, yeah. And then having to up their game so they can get through the obstacles faster, where just passing the obstacle isn't enough. Doing it fast now is important. So I don't mind that.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds strange because I'm a guy who likes more difficult obstacles, who likes more challenging. And when I race, that's an advantage to me. If it rains, that's an advantage to me. Things like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I don't find a 100-meter dash boring. You know, I don't you can watch, a marathon and it's not boring. And it's not like, you know, it's got to be different challenging. It's,
but you'll feel something in those events.
That's right. But you have to decide as you're organizing the race. So Spartan being who they are, they have to decide, do we want a race that is people, all the elites are going to get through the obstacles and there, it's just going to come down to a matter of strength and speed and stamina, you know, or do we want one where the obstacles are going to be more technical and it's going to require a lot more of a skill set. And that's what they have to decide as race organizers. What do we want? How do we want this to happen? And right now, it seems that in their mind, despite they're not going to say it this way, they just want the obstacles they have and whoever can get through it faster.
Yeah.
The spear, again, stuck in the Spartan ethos of, hey, this is a spear, the burpees. When you think what they first started out with, Spartan's ethos was kind of like spears, burpees, gladiators.
Yeah.
Gladiators are gone.
Yeah, we chose to get rid of that for good smart reason. Move.
Volunteers are tough enough to come by, so to find those guys is even harder. Gladiators are gone. Burpees are still there, but we're seeing lots of penalty loops, so maybe there's
the use of a memory test too.
Memory test,
and that's gone.
And all of you Americans, you're so lucky you never had to do disc golf.
Yes, we did frisbee golf.
Frisbee golf, man, I have never seen so many penalties as frisbee golf. And they had it right before the spear too. And then some people would fail the frisbee and fail the spear.
Yeah.
Do you remember the year after they did it? Because I think they did that in 2017 and then in 2018.
Yeah. My first year, it was in 2017. Yeah.
And then 2018, they had it on the map. And then underneath there is an asterisk saying, just kidding.
Yes, I remember
that. Like, that was good. I'll give them full marks on that one. That was great. That. So, but yeah, so what I'm saying is burpees may be slowly on their way out as you know, penalty loops are coming in. So maybe eventually they will move away from the spear. Spartan is stuck in their ways, but I guess you change, they just change slowly.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, the spear is just such an interesting one. And I think too, it wouldn't be so bad if the penalty for an obstacle that could take a couple seconds wasn't basically a 90-second to 2-minute penalty. Because again, that basically puts you in and out of a race in the elite side of it. So if the penalty was shorter or it was a quick run instead, then at least you're not out of the race. It's just a slight disadvantage if you don't hit your spear.
But it's still funny you say that it's a, you know, quick 2-3 second obstacle, but in reality it's not.
Because of the pullback.
That's right. Because if you start to, if you take a video of you, of anybody really, but you coming up to the spear, you getting up to the spear and, hi babe, we're recording, but that's okay.
I brought you a beer because your glass was still there.
It's beers with Bethany and I'm going to have 2 beers.
Double fisting on a Monday.
However,
I'm going to take your beer now.
Thank you. However, they're both non-alcoholic, so it's okay.
We're going to get drunk not fast.
We're going to get so not drunk. So I think, they might slowly take it out, right? It could happen.
Yeah.
And Again, maybe just for the festival area would be a good idea for it.
Maybe do a fun challenge with it. And I've also noticed the Donkwa hasn't been in races in a while, so maybe it's just quietly gone.
The Donkwa is not quietly gone, but here's the thing. Most venues do not want you to dig. And you'll see, especially in, you know, in Canada, it's very common that these are, it's almost like the classic Canadian race is the side of a ski hill. And I know a lot of the American ones are that way too, but most ski hills do not want you digging up their property.
Yeah.
So they don't want the dunk wall. They don't want rolling mud, and neither do I.
Right.
You know, it's just, I think for that reason alone, it's twofold. One, it saves money. Digging those holes is expensive. Renting the equipment to do so is expensive.
Yeah.
Filling them back in when you dug up people's property is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
They're great. So for most people, I don't think they miss it.
No, exactly. No one's complaining. Where's the dunk wall?
No, I haven't heard anybody complain. Now, it would be nice if they replace it with something else.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be complicated. Just anything, you know, whatever they want, replace it, especially on the sprint, because the sprint is already a little shy on obstacles. So maybe throw something else out there. That would be good. But if I never saw a dunk wall again, I would be just delighted.
Me too.
Yep. Even seeing in Savage, the last couple of races, they've been the Sawtooth, right? Their monkey bars has not had water underneath it. And it's for the same reason. It's expensive and a pain in the ass and difficult to get permission to dig. So why do it? You don't have to rent a backhoe. You don't have to hire a guy qualified to run said backhoe. And you don't have to fill it back up. So it's time, money, big savings, not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, seeing people fall in the water for a fail on Sawtooth is always kind of fun.
Well, and then you're wet when you have to try to go do it again.
And there's reason. See, that one, the water is a penalty I've never minded.
Yeah.
And maybe that's from watching Ninja Warrior and stuff like that is. And I will say when I did the X race at the CNE, which was essentially a Ninja Warrior competition. And the only time I've ever done a ninja competition where when you fall, you don't land on mats, you're landing in water. Mm. It was kind of cool. To fall and land in the water. Not that I fell, but I heard it was cool. I fell twice. But yeah, so I think hopefully those things are going out of the way. Maybe replace them with something else. And it doesn't have to be complicated. I don't care if it's super complex obstacle. I even don't mind Helix.
It was kind of fun, yeah. But even just another rig and just change the grips.
Yeah. But I mean, we proved with Helix, Helix can make a big difference because we've shown many people go through Helix over like 35, 40 seconds.
Yeah.
And then when we spent the day volunteering there, we got it down to like 7 seconds.
Yeah. And I passed a couple girls on Helix actually.
Volunteering pays off.
Yes. You can practice on the obstacles.
Why? That's exactly why you do it. That Force 5 rig that was at OCRWC. I got so good on that thing. It was unbelievable. I must have done it 100 times. Just.
Yeah.
Somebody be like, how do I do this? Let me show you. So anyway, might as well just talk about your Spartan experience. We'll start there because not like anything else happened this weekend, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll go with your Spartan experience. This is first Spartan back post Achilles devastation.
Yeah.
How did it feel? How did it all go?
Yeah, I was super excited to race. This was my third race weekend in a row, which is a fair bit considering I haven't raced in 2 years. And I had a bit of a niggle during the week after the trail race. I had a bit of an ankle roll in the trail race, and it wasn't a big deal, but I have this chronic issue with my ankle because some of my calcaneal fibular ligaments aren't fully intact. So it puts out my fibular head. And so I wasn't really able to train this week, and I had some aggressive treatment to get that sorted. And so my calf was just a bit of a mess going into it. So I was like, I know I'm not, there could be some issues. So I taped the crap out of my calf, just trying to hold it on, wore my compression socks. And so right off the start, there was just some extreme tightness. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to just hold back and kind of hope for the best, which isn't a bad race strategy anyways. So it did make me run very conservative. And then my goal was just to run a clean race, burpees, I mean, with the spear throw or whatever, that is what it is. but to just do well in the obstacles. And it was the super, so 10K, and as early as 4.5K, I started to get severe cramping in my calf. And again, I haven't done hills. I've been very apprehensive to do a lot of hills just with the Achilles stuff. So the mountain was really just trashing my legs pretty early, very quick. So the cramping started around 4.5K. At that point, I just decided I'm just going to try to enjoy this as best I can, stay in the mix. At that point, there was a group of four of us women who were kind of trading the lead off back and forth. There was some moments where the cramping was so bad, I wasn't sure I was going to finish. And then, there was a couple fails with some of the ladies, and the first place girl, Stephanie Champagne, she took off around 7K, and I just couldn't cover her moves. I couldn't get up on my toes at all, so I was just kind of trying to shuffle my way to the finish line. And we had all of the obstacles, which was really awesome, because I don't know if we've ever had this in Canada. So we had Twister, we had Beater, Monkey Bars, Rig, we had Bender, Helix, the Box. So all of the potential failable obstacles, Olympus. I felt great on all the obstacles. So I came up in second place behind Stephanie Champagne, and then Leslie Hoffman was behind me. So it was, I really, really had such a good time. I just wish the cramping situation in my legs wasn't so bad, but it all in all, my Achilles held up completely fine. It was the other leg that was giving me crap. So I'm still very happy with how it ended up. And my kids love nothing more than to see their mom on the podium. So that was really all that I cared about in the end. Just try to stand on the podium, make your kids happy.
You know what, like you say, shout out to Stephanie and Leslie. Both ran awesome races and really deserve their spots. They, from what I saw, they were really, really doing well. And I don't know Stephanie very well or much about her, but I do know that Leslie has been putting in a ton of work and it is paying off. So Leslie, way to go. You're looking awesome.
And both of those girls looked fantastic running. So they've definitely both been working on their running game. I can't wait to race them again and hopefully the legs hold up, but they've both definitely made some big improvements coming into this season. And Stephanie came into the race with a lot of confidence. She took it out hard.
Nice, nice. And I always like that. I like, win it till you're not. Maybe that's wrong. I know that's not a great like runner mentality, but I think that can work in OCR, especially on shorter courses.
Yeah, for sure. And especially a race that's so much up and down, because it's hard to really gain a lot of ground when you're power hiking up a mountain. So this race also wasn't as challenging as sometimes we've had at Brimacombe. It was dry, and Brimacombe, the bog situations can, at one point, again, it was dry, but they still sent us somehow through a section that was so muddy. I fell in a pit up to my waist and had to pull my legs out. I don't know how they do this at Brimacombe, but it's just still one of the swampiest courses I've ever run.
They found lots of mud for you to go in, eh?
Oh, yeah.
I hate when they do that. Why do they do that? Stop finding mud.
There's a section, I don't know how they do this. There's a section at this course where it's 500 meters of just mud.
Yeah.
And it was dry. I don't understand.
Yeah, they always seem to get that one, probably down in around that pond area. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they always seem to get that in there.
Yeah.
I remember the last time, that was right after that, they had the crawl with all the fire ants and they had to shut that down. I think I was in the last wave that got to go through that.
I went through it. Yeah.
I never had a problem. I didn't even notice. So
I didn't get bit, but I just went through the crawl fast enough, I guess.
We were just too damn fast. If you were getting bit by fire ants, that's part of the obstacle.
You're too slow.
Parting the F up, right? So that was good. And then the men had a great race on Saturday as well. Jesse Bruce coming in first, to everybody's surprise. Our boy, Team OFX, Brendan Neely, coming in second, having a great season opener. And then Sean Philip Toe.
Yeah, had a great race.
Loves it when I call him Sean Philip Toe. Philatois, I think. Sean Philatois.
I don't know.
Philip Toe it is. Anyway, coming in third, earning a great job. But so then you did not race on Sunday. You chose to back out of the sprint.
Yeah, I had a limp pretty good after that with my calf. It just really wasn't letting up. So I made the smart decision to not race. And again, I had a good conversation with my coach, because there's always that mentality of like, you just do it anyways. But I think with what my last 2 years have been like, I have to play the long game right now and be really smart about my racing. And so I had one good race on the weekend, 3 weekends in a row of racing. So we decided to shut it down for Sunday and just get a head start on recovering.
Yeah, and Sunday again, do you remember the women's results from Sunday?
Yep. So Stephanie again came out on first, and then Leslie was second, and then someone, I forget, I think her last name was Pullman. I haven't seen her before. It was in third.
Congratulations to them. And then on the men's, it was our boy Brennan Neely taking first place. Yep. And then there was a bit of a controversy. Not controversy, because this was what it was originally. So crossing the line was Brennan Neely, then Austin Azar, then Jay Price, I believe.
Sorry,
Jay Price was second, apparently, and then Austin third.
Oh, okay.
Either way, yeah. That was the podium, was those three guys. And it turns out, obviously by complete, accident, it happens. Jay and Austin both missed the sled drag and therefore got 10-minute penalties. And, that's why I say it's not so much a controversy. It happened, they missed it. You could say stuff like, well, maybe there's, I don't know if there was a volunteer there. If there was, they should have been a little more vocal guiding them in. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, it comes down to there was a part of the race they didn't do. And, so they got a 10-minute penalty because, we're supposed to do 30 burpees, but we're not doing penalties 10 minutes. We know this very well. We have been down this road. So sadly, they got bumped down and that caused them to drop further in the field. So then the final podium ended up again. Brennan Neely maintained his first place and had an awesome sprint. He did really well. Mm-hmm. Sean Philipteau back on the podium in second place. And Juan Carlos Obando got a third place. So good for them.
Yeah.
And I kind of look at it like this, because I know those guys, Sean and Juan, kind of might look at it as, and I think Sean's even mentioned this, default podium to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I get that. It probably is not near as satisfying for him as the podium from the day before.
Yeah.
But in the same thing, I look at it like this. If you're chasing someone who maybe is faster than you, and essentially you're just putting yourself in a position for them to make a mistake and hopefully you can capitalize. For example, like me, it happens all the time. I'm chasing people who are faster and I'm hoping that we get to an obstacle, they screw up, or I can capitalize on something along that lines. Mm-hmm. That whole shark in the water kind of deal.
Yeah.
They put themselves in a position to capitalize if a mistake was made. And, it might not be the most glorious podium at all, but, Jay and Austin made a mistake and they get the podium for it. So, So still I say, hey, you got it. Don't minimize the accomplishment.
Yeah, for sure. I think the bigger frustration though in this is the volunteer situation. Like, again, there shouldn't be unmanned obstacles. Like, I don't know what happened with the sled drag. I know there was a person there the day before. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there was someone there the second day, but even when in the afternoon, when my kids were doing the races, there was hardly volunteers on the course at all. And there was parts where kids were running past sandbags and they didn't know what to do. And people, they need to volunteer. We walked in the morning and we saw the volunteer meeting and there was maybe 10 people. Like, I don't know how you do a Spartan race with that few volunteers. So I ended up helping a little bit with the kids race and you have to get out and help. Like, there's so many people that are coming to these venues for the race. And even if you can put in an hour, run up to the obstacle and just make sure, especially for that elite heat where we're putting people on a podium, and taking the pictures and everything, we need to have volunteers at every of the obstacles.
And this is what I'll say, part of it, because I've been thinking about this a lot and we talk about volunteering all the time. I'm a big advocate of volunteer. Almost every race I go to, I volunteer. Sadly, not all of them. But here's the problem. I think people oftentimes do not volunteer for this reason. If you want a free race for your volunteering from Spartan, your shift is 5:30 to 2. That's minimum.
A.M.
5:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's huge. That's a long day. You got to get there very early. And you're putting in a lot of work for essentially a free race. And that's a free open race. That's not an age group or elite, right? So to be doing that is very committed. And then, you know, your day is pretty much blown. I know you could go do an open wave later that day, which is what it's for, but you know, it really takes a lot out of you. So then you think, well, it's a 2-day event. I'll volunteer the next day when I'm not racing. Well, then for a lot of people, they're traveling to these things and they have to pay for accommodations for the next day. Which vetoes any benefit to getting that free race. So I think maybe a Spartan needs to reassess it, because I mean, clearly volunteering is an issue, and it's not just Spartan. Every OCR, every hybrid race, they're all struggling to get volunteers. They maybe are going to have to reassess how they give out some of this stuff. Because I mean, you helped with the kids race, and I assume you didn't get anything for that.
No.
And that's great and that's cool, but maybe they need to say, okay, you know what, you helped out with the race, you were here for like 2 hours, here's a t-shirt. Let's be honest, a t-shirt probably costs them like 10 bucks. Right. Or here's a 50% code for a race, something along the lines to at least reward the people who will put in a little time. Because I know I didn't get to go. I was very pissed off that I didn't go because of work. But if I had gone, I wanted to do the media for the elite. And then I would have tried to volunteer later, but that means I'm not going to be going from 5:30 a.m. to 2. I'm going to be going from the end of the elite heat to maybe 2. So for that, maybe say, okay, well, you know, here's a race code, or here's 75% off a race code, or here's a t-shirt or something. Just give me something, because otherwise there's not a lot of incentive for me other than just, you know, being the good, which I usually do, but not everybody is able to do that. They might want a little help, right? And so I just think that maybe is something they need to consider.
Yeah. Or even getting volunteers from high schools, like calling up local. And again, this is a lot more legwork ahead of time, but getting, you know, the high school cross country team out and going through all of the obstacles before, I don't know, just another idea, because these races can't keep going on with the amount of volunteers that they have.
That is obviously, that's a great idea in theory, and I totally agree with it. But we've seen that come to play in, I think it was High Rocks did that in New York with either college or high school volunteers. And my God, they were shit.
Were they just afraid to use their voice?
I think they were afraid to use voice, and they just didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, like I saw a bunch of times in that particular event, like people come into a station to do wobbles or whatever, and dude's like playing on his phone. Or like no idea what a good rep is and not calling bad reps and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, part of that is volunteer placement and knowing what you got. And then part of that is, you know, kind of just taking what you got. So I agree, getting high school students, good idea. Sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't. I think RX1 does it quite a bit. They get in touch with a lot of the schools and work that way.
Well, even to put them at things like the water stations, and then just the directing people, don't go this way, go this way. Or there's a plate drag here. We all
like
plate drag.
Exactly. If they had a high school dude, he could have been out there on the phone just going like that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. It would have worked perfect. He would have been fantastic. Yeah. So hopefully that, but yeah, so everybody keep volunteering, trying, and I will try not to be hypocritical, and I will do so next time. Hopefully I'll get there. All right. So beyond that, and like I said, it was a pretty big weekend for our team OFX. We also, like I said, so you had a podium, Brennan had 2 podiums. So he showed you up. Sorry. then there was, let's talk a little bit more about Big Bear. So second race of the series.
Yeah.
We already mentioned Emma and Lindsay coming through the final, so to the final at the end together, and the spear throw being the difference. Nice to see Canada 1-2 for the women.
Yeah.
Great to see. Sadly, Ariel and Amanda, neither one of them made it down there for this one. Amanda made a post saying that she's just going to be focusing on North American Championships in Kelowna and Blue Mountains. So we look forward to seeing her.
OCRWC.
Sorry. Yeah. In tip top condition for those events. So I think she'll be ready.
And that's good. I think it's also good to see people putting a focus that way too, because I think there's also this Spartan mentality where like you race every weekend and you do 2 races a weekend and you're racing from February to December and like January is your off. Like sometimes it's okay and like it is in road racing too, like you have two or three or four big races and you have training blocks where you appropriately train for these races and you focus on it. That's also another way of doing this, so good for her.
Yeah, I think so too. And Ariel sadly is battling a bit of an injury, so hopefully she'll recover and she'll be back soon. But so the big things, Lindsay again, Lindsay's retirement tour rolling right along.
Yep.
Another big retirement win. Nobody does retirement like Lindsay.
Yeah.
So yeah, a great win. But as she said, you know, she obviously found it. She maybe thought it was a little hollow, but again, it is what it is. She put herself in that position and she won. Emma, another great race. She is really proving she is top notch. Third place, Chris Rogalski.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I know. I was so shocked. Well, I was shocked after Saturday, her taking the Hyrux World Champ, but then to come back and the next day beat out, you know, Rose, Alex, like all these top girls to come in third. Like, wow.
Like less than 12 hours.
Like I know how I walked the day after Hyrux. And then you go and race a race like Big Bear at altitude.
And that's the thing. I think it was like her start time was pretty much 12 hours from her finish time.
Oh, wow.
Hyrux. Yeah. And she had to drive 3 hours and sleep in between.
Yeah. It's shocking.
And I did make this comment on the live stream. Her recovery is near comic book hero like.
Yeah.
Like she's got like some Wolverine healing factor going on because it makes no sense why she's able to do what she does.
No, those are two massive, massive efforts.
But she's just unreal. And
yeah.
And just embraced. And even after Tahoe, she still looked fun. She still looked ready. She looked like she could do another. Or sorry, after Big Bear, my bad, not Tahoe. But she looked ready to go again. I do say from speaking with her this weekend a little bit and seeing, I think she even surprised herself this time.
I think so too.
Like even I think she looked back, she's looking back at this one going, wow, that shouldn't have happened, I think.
It was a tight race too, so it could have gone a lot of ways, and she just had a little bit of the edge that day. So sometimes the stars just align, right?
Yeah, and she has definitely had the year so far this year. Came on the scene last year, and she's been killing the Savages, and it seems there really is nothing she can't do. She's just
She said she's doing a couple ultras this summer. I think that probably is what helps her in her recovery too, is that she does have this ultra running background.
Yeah. And I admire her whole, oh, I'm just going to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's exciting. That's nice. That's really cool. Not a lot of people can do that where they have that ability to just do all these things they want to do. And I mean, she's young and maybe it'll slow down as she gets a little bit older, but
yeah,
for now she's killing it. It's awesome. It's fun to watch. She's personable. She's great. And
she has a big smile on her face the whole time.
Oh, she's super nice to be around. She's again, very much a advocate of volunteering and helping grow the sport. Yeah. And I will give Matt credit. I talked to him this morning and he says she should have the nickname of Chris Ridiculous. What she does is ridiculous.
So, it is ridiculous. Yeah.
And then on the men's side, Ryan Atkins with a bounce back where he didn't really have the best race at Slow. He came back and won this one. I did call him in the prediction contest. I got that one right.
Again, this course favored him a million times better than Slow. So,
but Big Bear is where VJ beat him last year.
Yeah, right? But we know Ryan comes back with a vengeance. Yeah.
And that's why I picked him in the prediction contest. I did have a lot of people went with VJ. I did not. Not that I doubt VJ. I just thought the same thing. I thought Ryan will want this one very badly.
Yeah.
And he did. So that puts him and VJ tied on the top of the points, each with a win apiece. Lars Anderson in second.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know much about Lars?
No, I looked him up a little bit. It just looks like he has a trail running background. He's run a couple. This will be his fourth Spartan.
From Alaska.
Yeah.
So definitely difficult for him to get to a lot of races. So he probably will not be chasing the whole series, but the guy has skills. He is really good.
And I saw some video and he was really smooth on obstacles still.
Yeah. He's not bad at all.
Yeah.
And if he was one, I think, let's say he lived in California or somewhere or Colorado with everybody else, I would think he would be really pushing BJ and Ryan. He'd be right up there.
Yeah.
So Great for him. And then VJ coming in third. I'm sure for VJ, he may be a little disappointed with that, but at the same time, guys just ran a good race, and he ran a good one too, and just, you know, wasn't his day that day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Surprises for me, I thought Hawk Call would do better.
Yeah.
He ended up back around ninth or something like that.
Yeah. He's still kind of that short, flat, and fast. Like, if he's racing college cross country, college cross country courses are flat.
Yeah.
So he's still transitioning into these bigger mountain races. So, and I don't know what his training is like. I'm sure his dad is preparing him quite well for these races, but it probably just wasn't his course yet.
Yeah. And Ryan Scheidig. Rylan. Not Ryan.
Oh, Rylan. Yeah.
Rylan. He had a pretty good race. I think he was he fifth or fourth or fifth? He was right up there. He had another good one. And our boy Aaron Newell came in sixth, which I think is very good stand, good showing considering the field that was out there, and him just getting back from his epic adventure down in the southern continent, I would call it. South America.
I forget.
Peru. From what I could see, what he did down there was run a couple of races and take a lot of picture of dogs.
Yeah, and eat.
Aaron's trip. And ate. He ate, took pictures of dogs, and ran a couple of races.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like a good trip. So awesome to see another great race. Series is going on well. I think, is the next one Mexico? I think the next one?
I think so.
You think it'll be well attended? I'm thinking it might be a different one.
I don't know. People are saying they're going, but it'll be interesting to see what actually happens.
Yeah, I think if I was someone looking to, you know, up, maybe someone sitting in that like 6 to 10 spot and wanted to jump a few spots, I think I'd make that trip. And
yeah,
if I could scam a podium, because I think you're going to see Blue have a lot bigger attendance for the.
I've heard a lot of people saying they're coming to Blue Mountain.
Yeah, I'm renting out cots in my basement for $7,000 a night. But you get a grilled cheese.
Is that extra or is that included in the $1,000?
No, it's extra. But there is a 15% mandatory tip. And it's already on your bill. And I'll let you ride in the back of the van. Well, not in the back of the van because there's not enough room, but I'll get a trailer from U-Haul and you can go in the back of the U-Haul and we'll shuttle you to the event and we'll give you a milk box to sit on in the U-Haul because that's the kind of classy establishment we're running. Your room is available, by the way.
Thank you.
enough for Spartan. Big jump on, and this to me was obviously the banner event, HYROX World Championship in Vegas. Never so much have I had a feeling of missing out as I'm like, I freaking the even days before watching the buildup, especially with a lot of the Europeans posting all the pictures of arriving and everything they're doing. I'm like,
yeah,
this is just world class.
Yeah. You know? They did such a good job of the pre-race stuff and doing like features of the different athletes and their training and leading into it. They did such a good job of the media.
Yeah, they do well. And HYROX, I think beyond better than any race company I know. And I'm not just talking OCR or hybrid. I'm talking like even better than Ironman and stuff like that. They put on this great looking atmosphere.
Yeah.
They make these venues look awesome. They make you want to be there. And that's a talent. That is really a talent. And that really draws people in.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, great field, huge. We won't go through the whole thing. We talked tons about who was going to be there, who was not.
Mm-hmm.
Before we talk about the big race, I want to say shout out to a couple of people, technically who won age groups. But David Magida showing that he can run sub 60,
mm-hmm.
and winning his age group, but also being the fastest male non-elite 15 pro. Now, his time was faster than most of the people in the Elite 15, but the course layout was different. So you can't, like, people who are like, wow, he shouldn't, you can't compare the ones.
Oh, okay.
Right, because they changed the layout completely to make the Elite 15 more viewer friendly. So you, it ends up, you really can't compare the two, but still the sub 60, that still stands as a great time by David and deserves all the accolades he can get. So good for him. And our girl, Heather White. Mm-hmm. Another Timo effect. She won age group. She was the second fastest non-elite pro woman. Again, same kind of deal as David. Her time was faster than some of the women in the elite, but whatever. Big race for her. I think it was a personal best by 5 minutes.
Wow.
She ran around 1:10. And Heather, we're so proud of you. You killed it. So happy to have Timo FX, you know, branded on you. We'll get the tattoo soon. amazing. We couldn't ask for a better representative. So happy that she did well. And Heather will be on very soon. I did do an interview with Heather once. I never went to air. And here's the reason why. There was something going on with the sound after, where there's like this giant static. We didn't hear it when we were recording.
Oh.
To edit it. It was, oh, it drove me nuts. And I was like, I couldn't do it. I told her, I'm like, I'm so sorry. We're going to have to do it again, because it was just, it was bad even for me. So I couldn't do that to her. So hopefully maybe next week, maybe soon, to talk about her experience there. Cause
yeah, we'll talk to her again.
So she's great. Then for the big one, go with the men. Now, did the men shock you in any way, or?
No, I don't think so. I think Hunter made it very clear that this has been a really long buildup for him, and his sights have been set on winning this race for a long time. So I think when Hunter is focused like that, there wasn't really anyone that was going to touch him. So he did run away with this one.
Yeah, and I think Kent did. I know Kent kind of seemed afterwards a little disappointed, and understandably, because Kent was equally as focused and driven. And Hunter was the better man that day. And yeah. Kent put out a really good post where, you know, he's like, I both hate and love Hunter because I respect him and think he's amazing. But if it wasn't for him, I would have a world championship. So
yeah.
I think he has a really good perspective on it, and is taking it well, and is like, I'm just gonna come back even better next year.
Yeah.
And I think he will. I think Kent will be even better next year. And if you listen to what they're saying, with Hunter saying, I'm kind of doing semi-retirement, maybe a Lindsay-esque retirement, who knows, and Kent going, I'm going even more all in, I would tend to believe that next year will be Kent's year, and you're going to see him all over every podium. Mm-hmm. And he just seems to have this dialed in as a proper training method.
Yeah. There was a penalty given to Hunter.
And Kent. They both got a penalty.
Oh, okay.
And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this was on the burpee broad jumps, I think, was where they got it.
Okay.
Because of the way it was set up, they kept going back to the same area, right? So rather than all these different, go to a different section for the wall, or different section for the lunges, different section for the burpee broad jumps, different side. What they did was they had them all do it in the same area. They'd come back to their own same lane all the time. Mm-hmm. Hunter and Ryan were obviously the first ones into the burpee broad jumps, and whatever judge they had. And this is where I hated this, but I am going to throw the blame on the judges for this one.
Yeah.
I say I hate to do it, but I probably blame judges a ton of times. So whatever. Anyway, they got sent out onto their run, not doing an extra lap of their burpee broad jumps, right? So the length of, you're supposed to be 80 meters of burpee broad jumps, right? So then the length of it would be, I guess, 75 meters. Anyway, the point was they were one shy, whatever the length they had set out, and the judge sent them on their way. The judge is like, yep, go, go, go. So they both went. And in the end, they both end up receiving a 1 minute penalty. I think that's actually kind of fair, because one, I don't think it was their fault.
Yeah.
And at the same time, a minute penalty is really pretty lean.
Right.
Considering the energy you save and not having to actually do that process. So was it fair? I'll be honest, I cannot find in the rule book where there is a definitive, this is what you get for a penalty for this situation. Uh-huh. So I guess this was a call on the fly. I don't think it was a bad one.
Yeah, it would be so unique, because normally the burpee broad jumps, you go down and back and there's kind of a finish line to them. So that call would never be made normally, but with this setup with the down and backs, that's the only scenario that would ever happen.
Yeah, exactly. And it being different for the judges, even if they're experienced high risk judges, because not only that, it's not 100 meters like your sleds 80. Just were, it's 80. So, yeah. You know, the other things that would be done on that area the farmer carry, the lunges, the sleds, they're all, you know, 100 or 200. So it's it's very easy to do, whereas the 80 kind of throws thing off. So that was the penalty. But luckily, it didn't affect the competition in any way.
Yeah.
So that's good to see. You know, I don't think it had any adverse or positive effect for anybody. So
yeah, that's good.
Just glad that came out of the way. And really, like you say, you did say Hunter was dominant in the walkway, but they were at the wall balls at the same time. So Kent was within shooting distance. It was it was not bad. It was a good race. Then third place, Tim
Reinick. Wasn't it Alex?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Alex Ronkovic. Alex Ronkovic and Tim fought all day back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I would like to definitely say, I think I constantly underestimate Alex Ronkovic.
Yeah.
I do. I really do. I'm like, yeah, you know, he's okay, but he's not. But you know what? Every time he was second last year for World Championship? He was on the podium. Mm-hmm. He's the only one that was on the podium in Europe and in North America. So you know what, Alex, my bad. You definitely got this shit down. I will stop underestimating you. But yeah, he had a great race and just, you know, I think he paced himself all day with Tim and then figured we'll get to the wall balls and I'll take him there. And that's exactly what he did.
Wow.
And then Tim, he showed me that he could handle the sleds. You know, he showed me, but that's what I got out of this was Tim. I already knew was going to be great on everything else, but he proved that, you know, he could handle the North American sleds. Mm-hmm. And then in fifth place, our boy, bringer of the smoke, shover of things up Jack Bauer's ass, spreadsheet things. I'm saying so. Dylan Scott, awesome race. That guy is just fantastic. Hardest worker in High Rocks.
Yes. Yeah.
And just he's so exciting. I could watch that guy race all the time. He's just very entertaining and very, very good person. So thank you so much, Dylan, for bringing us along the ride with you. And, you know, another great day for Team OFX there. So that was awesome. Yeah. Before we talk about the women, there was a bit of a brouhaha about sleds.
Okay.
So have you not heard about this?
No.
So beforehand, they took one of the normal weight plates off the sleds. So they took 55 pounds off and they put on taller poles. Now, questioning is why, you know, all this stuff. And they, you know, obviously they're like, you know, well, we're trying to do it in fairness, make things better, all that stuff. The poles or whatever people have been saying they should be longer, whatever. I don't know. I don't know that it makes that much difference because quite frankly, I think if you grab that high on the poles that are taller, you're just going to push the sled more into the ground and not make it better. Mm-hmm. And actually we saw Rachel Vondrak was kind of doing that. She was struggling with that and talk a little more about her later. But the pulling of the weight off had people, and myself included when I heard it, freaked.
So they lowered the weight of the sleds?
Yes, and apparently no. So what? High Rock says that the sleds being used for Vegas, the sleds themselves, no weights on, just the sleds, were heavier than the sleds used previously. So that when they took the extra weight off, it actually evens out and it's the same weight as always what it should be. So, for example, I believe the weight for the men's sled should be 385. I think that's what normally the weight with the plates on. And then I think if you read the rules of High Rocks, it says that the sled is 65 pounds. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's what is that? That's 65. That's, want to do quick math with me here? Come on, you're the school teacher. Here, 85, 85, 15, 15 from 65, that's 50. So that's 450. Look at that. I got it right. So they're saying that the combined weight of the plates on the sled and the new poles added up to 450.
Oh, now, okay.
I will be honest. I'm hesitant to buy that Because for me, it's hard to believe that the new sled is essentially 55 pounds heavier than the old one.
It's pretty significant. And that the poles would make that much more of a difference other than like 5 or 10 pounds.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if I don't know how much taller the poles were, but let's say they were like, you know, 10 centimeters taller, in all honesty, you're talking maybe an extra pound of steel for each one.
Right.
4 pounds. So I don't know, but I wasn't there, so I can't prove it. So I got to go by what they say, and nobody has weights saying differently. I do know that the sled push times were fast. And a lot of the competitors said that they were definitely easier. As Dylan was one very vocal about it, said it was definitely easier than normal. And so whatever it is, people have theories, controversy, ideas. I mean, some people are saying, well, that was so that the Europeans didn't have to deal with the regular normal North American sleds. Who knows? Maybe yes, maybe no. I'm not gonna go down there. The one question I do have, and I would like to get it answered, is these sleds that they use here were not, I was under the impression, I could be wrong, but I was under the impression these were the same ones they used in LA.
Right.
Which would make sense. Vegas, LA, fairly close together. You're not buying all new gear, you're trucking it out.
Yeah.
Does that mean that the sleds in LA were 55 pounds heavy?
Right. So have people looked at the difference of those push times?
In LA, there was only one push time for the men under 4 minutes.
Oh, wow. So that would make sense then.
Yeah, and Cole Schwartz was stuck on it for 9 minutes.
Wow.
So whereas this one in the Elite 15, nobody was over 4 minutes.
Okay, so that's about it. That would make sense if that was a
55-minute. Dylan Scott, who a normal push time for him is 4:30, did a 3:30 in Vegas.
And he was still one of the slower times.
Yeah. Yeah, he was not one of the fastest push times. So it is what it is. Here's the thing. I don't care because everybody there pushed the same sled.
Right.
So that's cool. But in my mind, you don't screw with shit right before your world championship.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do it this way, which is fine, every sled and every race can be different. I don't care.
Yeah.
But don't have just the top 15 times be your in for the qualification for the 2023 championship. Get a little more detailed system, and that way it will be a little more fair. I mean, it is what it should. I hate going on about this because I think other than that, Hyrux did such a good job with everything.
Yeah.
And a great show and an incredible race. So but that's the one kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's just the one thing that they seem to have not quite yet figured out for making it consistent.
Yeah, nail that down or just say, hey, the sleds are a little bit different in places. And
you know. But then you have to eliminate world records.
Yeah, well, who cares? Does that make that much into it? I don't think it adds that much into the race myself. It's a nice thing to put on a post every now and again.
Yeah.
But I don't think it really grows the sport that much.
No.
You know, I mean, they have and I compare it all the time to marathon world records. They have marathon world records, but that's not what grows the sport. There's not a billion people chasing the marathon world record. There's just a billion people running marathons to run a marathon.
True. Yep.
We're getting to that. Just simmer down. Simmer down here. The boss is demanding this. We need to talk about Lauren Weeks right now.
We need to talk about Lauren Weeks.
She did a thing, whatever.
No big deal.
Whatever. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Lauren Weeks, with doctor's approval and emergency protocol put into place, as well as some modified standards, especially on the burpee broad jumps.
Yeah.
Was able to compete at 8 months pregnant. And essentially her goal was to make every woman who is 8 months pregnant feel bad about themselves.
Right. Any woman who's pregnant, period. Yes.
Any woman who is pregnant, period, feel bad about yourself because of what Lauren did. Un-frickin' believable.
I know. I would really love to be a fly on the wall in the conversations with her and her doctor, though.
Her doctor must think she's insane.
Well, I'm just so, well, she has said her doctor's a female, she was an athlete. I'm just so curious what her doctor says is like, this is your line where like maybe you've gone too far. Like, I just don't know. I don't know. And again, things change from when I was having kids, and like, I just like, what is, where would her doctor say if like, is it heart rate? Is it body temp? Is it, I don't know, respiratory rate? Like, if you come to this line and you can't calm this down, you shouldn't continue. Like, does Lauren have that line? Has her doctor said anything? I'm just curious from that perspective.
I believe that's exactly what they did, is they were monitoring that as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's exactly what happened. So, but, and I just wanted to go through this, and I'm going to read to you how she did. So her overall time was 1:13:02, which for someone in fantastic shape is really, really good.
Still 10 minutes slower than Lauren's best, but.
Yeah, exactly. So she placed in the Elite 15, 9th overall. 8 months pregnant.
I couldn't imagine being beaten by someone 8 months pregnant.
Not just beaten, but smoked. I'm going to run through the whole thing. Lauren ran her opening run 3:04. Her opening
kilometer. That has to be a short kilometer.
It has to be. She was 4:30 on the ski erg, 4:08 on her second run, 3:35 on the sled, 4:25 on the run, 4:33 on the pole, 4:30 on a run, 4:26 on the burpees, 4:29 on the run, the row 4:47, 4:40 on the run, 2:54 on the farmer carry, another 4:42, 4:07 on the sandbag lunges, 4:58 on the run, 3:37 on the wall balls.
Oh.
4:45 in the rock zone time. Her total run time was 34:51.
Wow.
That's just nuts. I think in labor, Lauren's going to break out into burpees. Maybe just throw up some wall balls, you know, challenge the doctor to a sprint. I have no idea, but
it's super unique. Like, this is just not, this is for all the pregnant women out there, this is not your standard. This is not normal. Like, I was an athlete too going into my pregnancies, and like, I couldn't have done that. And every woman's body is different. Every pregnancy is different. And again, we see this too. Rachel was in the same race. She was far less along, and she dropped out based on, again, her doctor saying, these are your lines. These are your hard lines of your heart rate, your body temp. And she made the smart decision to drop out. And Rachel is not less of an athlete than Lauren, but again, it's just the way your body responds in pregnancy. And it's not saying anything against either of the athletes. I just think Lauren's body is tolerating pregnancy like a superhuman.
Yeah. Again, yeah. It's a good question. What's going to happen when Chris Roglosky gets pregnant? No, Lauren just, again, I'm sure in her incredible training, her discipline, all that stuff has a great deal to do with what she was able to accomplish, but also so does luck of the draw on that one where.
Yeah. Because again, I wouldn't say Rachel is any less.
No. If
all of those things created, like, that would be completely equal. And again, it's just, your body is very different in pregnancy.
Yeah. And Rachel, again, I think, you know, she put up a post where she's like, I could have finished, but I would have finished last, and just better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah.
I think for her, it was definitely the right decision. I'm glad that she did what she did.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see both of them having such great support systems. And I love seeing that. It makes me really, really happy. And I will say, when Lauren came out right off the heart and right off the start and decided, I'm going to lead this thing right away, I was just, it was great. It was fantastic. See, a woman has no fear.
Yeah.
So, great stuff.
It's super exciting to see. And I know there's probably also people that watching Lauren do that, it also makes them really upset, because there's still people that very much want to put the pregnant body in a little like in bubble wrap. And but yeah, the woman's body and during pregnancy as well is incredibly resilient, and we can still do hard things while pregnant and everything is going to be fine, especially if you've done it before. So yeah, be inspired by Lauren, but again, also keep into consideration that what she's doing is still extremely exceptional.
Yeah, and I do hear rumors of like the odd bit of people saying some negative stuff about, well, she should not be doing that. She shouldn't.
Absolutely.
Everything she did was calculated. Everything she did was monitored and doctored approved. So if, you know, you believe you know better than Lauren's doctors, that's great, but you probably don't.
Yeah, just keep your opinions to yourself, I think, ultimately.
Yeah, the modifications mostly, I think, were for her burpee broad jumps, just as far as what part of her chest needed to touch the ground.
Right.
You know,
right.
Obviously, she has, yeah, issues, you know, cause any body dysmorphia. Yeah. So yeah, she's great. And so was Rachel, and I'm very impressed with her. The fact that either of these women went out to take this on is just a testament to what kind of athletes they are and what kind of competitors they are. And I expect to see them both back destroying again.
Oh yeah.
After their pregnancies.
Mom strength. Look out. Yeah.
And I said this before, like, these kids have no excuses, you know? You can't say, I can't do that, I can't do this. Mom's going to be like, I did 9th best in the world at High Rocks, 8 months pregnant with you, and you can't clean your room? Yeah. It's not going to fly. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do your homework and get a job? No, you're done. She has, like, the ultimate hammer. Mm-hmm. Oh, done. So all right, to the rest of it. So we'll go through how the women did. We did mention earlier Chris Rogowski mm-hmm. winning, and the cool thing about this to me, because it also backs up some of my arguments, she was not originally in the top 15 and was part of the roll down placements and such, and she won. Bam.
Yeah. Maybe we need to evaluate the system.
Evaluate the system. But she ran such a smart race. Mm-hmm. You know, she used her strengths. She waited for her time to strike on that last run, on her last run after the lunges. It looked like it could have been her first run.
Really?
She was so smooth, so such a great stride, so consistent the whole way through. And just, she could not have planned it better. She actually said, early in the race, she puked.
When?
Like, I think it was like maybe after the sleds or whatever like that. She said she actually puked. So it wasn't like just a little bit in the mouth. She said she full on puked. And felt way better afterwards. And then was able to get the hammer down. So.
Wow.
And she also said that this was, you know, Chris has said in the past that she only usually runs 80%. She never goes higher. And she said this time she did. She pushed a little beyond her normal means. And hey, Chris, looks what happens when you try. She's just great. That said, she did not run away with it. It was a fantastic race.
Yeah.
Linda Meyer led a lot. Sorry, Alundra Greenlee led a lot in the beginning. Or Landra Greenlee, she looked really good. And a lot of people did not see her coming. She's only done one High Rocks before.
Wow.
And she came out looking very strong, definitely ran really hard. And then Linda Meyer, who probably, at least me for sure, I underestimated as one of the ladies coming across. I very much had the emphasis on Viola Miram and Sarah Colty, and Linda just showed up and came, she came to play. She was ready to go, came out hard. Mm-hmm. And I mean, ended up second overall. She pushed, she gave Chris all she had. So it was great. And then going into the wall balls, Alandra Greenlee was in third. And I did say that if you get to the wall balls and you're not 20 ahead of Miriam, she's about to pass you.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah.
Watching her do wall balls, it defies gravity to me. I just don't get.
I've never seen anyone do wall balls faster.
No, no. And she's such a, I think it's because she is so compact.
Right? Yeah.
So her squat is just up and down so fast that it just works well. So, you know, she ended up taking that third spot on the podium. Well deserved. Viola had a bit of an off race. She did an extra lap at one point.
Oh no.
Yeah. And that definitely, I think that cost her a battle for the podium anyway. She could have definitely been fighting with Alandra and Miriam for that third spot for sure. And our good buddy, Tara Jackson, she put in a sixth place effort and a great run. I think a lot of people underestimated her as well. Mm-hmm. I did not. I thought she would do really well, and she did. I admittedly put her in third, and I might have been playing favorites a little bit. But But she came sixth, so good for her. Can't wait to talk to her about it. All in all, the women's race, I think there was 8 women on the wall balls out of that 15 altogether.
I saw clips of that, and that was super exciting to see.
It was just an epic finish. And part of me, so I was kind of divided on this. They didn't have those digital clocks above mm-hmm. wall balls seeing where they're at. So we didn't really know how many wall balls each lady was at. But it did look like both Linda, Alandra, and Miriam were making up ground on Chris on the wall balls. Now, Chris probably went in there with about a 10 wall ball lead.
Okay.
And it looked like they were making up ground on there, but we weren't sure. So I'm like, would it have been better to know, or was it better not knowing and just kind of being,
I know they're coming. Well, if I was an athlete, I would much rather know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Chris said she had a pretty good bead on what everybody's reps was at, but she said she did know they were coming, and they were coming hard. So there was a bit of worry there. Mm-hmm. So it ended up being great. And like I said, Chris, world champion from not even being in the Elite 15, ranked 9th when she was placed in there. And then,
yeah. Well, and sometimes there's something to be said also for going into a race with zero pressure on you. Mm-hmm. I don't think people were ranking her in that top 5. And so you just kind of go into it. I'm going to have a really good time, have the best race I can. Nobody, if I come 10th or I come top 5, no one's going to say anything about it one way or the other. So she could just kind of go out and run her best race, and her best race that day just happened to be first place. But there was just so little pressure on her.
Yeah, I had her picked 5th was where I had her placed. And actually, so Jack and I did a show for Obstacle Racing Media where we went through and did our picks, and Jack didn't even have her in the top 5. By the way, Jack, I think I smoked you on that one, just saying. So yeah, she was definitely not one of the favorites, and she just surprised everybody. And yeah. I don't think she'll be able to do that again, because nobody's going to be surprised now.
No, I don't know if anybody can ever bet her out of anything anymore.
No. I wouldn't pick a podium without her, I think, in anything anymore. I'm just gonna just Chris on the podium
for what I think this is Chris's year right now.
Horseshoes, tiddlywinks, whatever. Calligraphy. I don't know what else she can do.
Yeah, maybe modern pentathlon. Yeah.
Well, she won't need to learn how to ride a horse, so that's good. Actually, she probably already knows that.
But she does know how to ride a horse.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. So she might be upset about that part. So,
yeah.
Anyway, but all in all, sled crap aside, so many great stories.
Yeah.
Such a stellar event. Everybody that went there seemed to love it. Just great job by Hyrox. Well done. Look forward to the 2023 season. Notice there's no Toronto date on the calendar yet, but there's still time to fix that. And hopefully, very much hoping to finally get to go do one myself now that I have proven I can get across the border. So hopefully that'll happen. I don't know what else I could take away from that other than I was just really impressed.
They put on such a great event.
Yeah, and they did. I mean, and it's not easy, right? That stuff is hard.
Yeah,
hard to do, otherwise everybody'd be doing it. And I was worried, and I did mention this when I talked to Matt today, I was worried that the attendance would be low because no open wave. And I'm really, really happy to say I was very, very wrong. Mm-hmm. And it looked like attendance was great, atmosphere was awesome, and great job by Hyrox America and E-Rock and all his team putting that on, and all the people from Hyrox World. And Flo for learning the American sleds are heavier.
Was he in denial?
I think he was, yeah. But he came over and he put on a good show. He put on a good run. Good for him. And you got lots of great pictures and fantastic content. If you ever want to check it out, check look at High Rocks Daily. Awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great content there.
That's good for me, Beth. You got anything else? I'm going to finish up my beer and go to bed and dream of going to High Rocks. And...
No, that's great. Yeah, a stellar weekend. So much going on right now in racing. So it's exciting to see all these races back in full force. So yeah, good talk. Great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Take care.